For many kids, 4-H is a big part of growing up in Wisconsin, and often they are the latest in a long line of family members who have taken part. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 2014 is the 100th anniversary of 4-H in Wisconsin. Find out a little bit about its history today and what the program focuses on today. It's quite a bit different. In some ways, it's the same, but in a lot of ways, it's very, very different. Rick Clemmie, one of our guests, professor of Ag and Applied Economics at UW-Madison, but also dean and director of Cooperative Extension for UW Extension. And Rick, always great to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much. Dale Lighthizer is our guest as well, state program director for 4-H Youth Development, has been a youth development professional for 36 years. And his dad was kind of that before, wasn't it, Dale?
He was. I consider myself a slow learner because of that.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, it's great to have you along today as well. And as you listen to these guys talk, I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments, or maybe you've got some experiences to share. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We certainly love to hear from you. We're already getting some calls, so that's wonderful. How did 4-H start on a national level?
Well, on a national level, it began in the early 1900s, and it was really an opportunity or an effort to try and change the behavior of adults. And, you know, the land-grant university system, and maybe this goes back a little bit more in history, Larry, in 1863, President Lincoln signed the Morrill Act that granted land to each one of our states for a university that had three different missions. One was to do research that related to the people of the state. One was to do teaching, like all universities do. And the third was to extend the knowledge that came out of the institution back to the people of the state. So that's why UW is really the home for 4-H youth development. It goes back to the land-grant university system. So early innovations in agriculture in the 1900s, you know, that was a major industry in the country, was agriculture, and researchers had come up with hybrid corn.
Mm.
Farmers were not adopting the practice because it was a complete shift from what they'd been doing, and that was keeping the fertile corn back and being able to plant that the following year. So in order to really speed up the adoption of that innovation, there were educators who thought, let's get kids to plant plots of corn and measure the yield at the end of the year, and that would be an incentive, proof to their parents that it was a worthwhile kind of innovation. And so we've got pictures from the early 1900s where kids were getting 230 bushels an acre, 250 bushels an acre of corn when their parents with fertile corn had been getting 35, 40, 50 bushels an acre. So what do you think those parents did?
Yeah.
They started to change their behavior. So that's really the origin of the program, is with corn clubs across the country. So that was the early 1900s.
And Co-op Extension started, what, 1914, wasn't it, Rick?
Yeah. Well, officially, the federal funding for Cooperative Extension also started in 1914, making this a centennial year for that Smith-Lever funding, which comes from USDA to the state of Wisconsin and all extension services across the country. And all of these extension services have a 4-H youth development program that is integrated with our work that we focus on with agriculture. Dale already talked about how those interconnect with the early stories of the early 4-H programs, with our family living program, which clearly there's a connect around early childhood education and 4-H and healthy living and wellness programs, with our community development programs, because we're all about leadership in the youth development, 4-H youth development programs and community development too. So 4-H youth development in Wisconsin, like most states, is a very integral part of Cooperative Extension at UW Extension.
Oh, absolutely. And 4-H today, who participated? I mean, the early, you know, corn, so that meant it was farm kids that were really participating right off the bat. But now it's much broader than that, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. You know, last year, Larry, we had 355,000 young people across the state that were involved in youth development programs that Extension runs. And, you know, those kids are distributed in urban settings and rural settings and suburbs across the state. And when you've got that many young people, it's really the profile of our state.
Yeah, absolutely. And boys and girls, about equally represented? Are more girls than boys? Or is it about equal?
You know, it's about equal, but generally speaking, we do get more girls than boys. But I wish I could tell you the exact percentage.
Doesn't matter. It's close.
It is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. And it used to be, as you were saying, it used to be rural communities, but now really it's urban and rural.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got an obligation to really meet the needs of young people across the state. You know, we receive tax dollars to help support 4-H youth development, you know, because we're part of the land-grant university system. So we reach out and into communities across the state wherever we can really try and support positive youth development with young people.
I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. If you have a question or comment, call us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can post a question or photo on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We already have one cool one up there. How about you? You can send one there. Or if you want to email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Jeff in Madison first here. Jeff, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm a 25-year 4-H leader. And I just wanted to change people's mind about what 4-H is. I mean, it isn't just cows and horses, although that's certainly an important part of it. The largest project in the state has nothing to do with agriculture. It's photography, of all things. There are projects that you probably have never heard of. We have an astronomy project. We are building two large 4-H observatories in Wisconsin, one on the Baraboo Bluffs, one north of La Crosse. We have just made an agreement with the Skynet research telescopes that are around the world that's in with Yerkes Observatory down in Lake Geneva, that we are now having 4-H kids are able to get online and use research-grade telescopes to do real live research around the world, and it's all through 4-H. We have a rock climbing project that we have kids from all over the state that come once a month and climb at Devil's Lake. We've got instructors there. It costs nothing. All the equipment is provided. We have a new STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math program. We have a statewide director of that, Joanna Sklusasik, and she will come to your project, to your club, and we'll do a robotics project that will knock your socks off. Next Tuesday is the 4-H day at the State Fair. You have got to come to the State Fair and see all the displays we've got up. And the last thing I got to say is, being a senior leader, a real live adult who leads projects, is one of the most fun things there is. You don't have to have a kid in 4-H to do it. I don't. My wife doesn't. And if you've got a passion for any type of anything, from woodworking to electronics to anything, volunteer to be a senior leader. It is just a hoot.
Well, Jeff, I thank you very much for calling. Maybe we should have had him on the show with us here.
We didn't even pay him.
Well, he's a senior leader, and as he says, and leaders and adult people donating their time is very critical to this whole operation, isn't it?
It is. It is, Larry. Last year, we had about 15,000 volunteers in all of our programs across the state of Wisconsin. It's real interesting to me that the Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics, values volunteer time right now in our state at $21.78 an hour. And with the volunteers we've got, we know from our research that they put in about 128 hours a year. When you do the multiplication on that, it gives us a value of $41 million in volunteer time. So people like Jeff are an asset that we cannot, we just can't do the work we do. We can't work with the number of children we reach without volunteers. They really build the capacity of our program.
You know what, as I was saying, you said 121 hours a year. That's only about 10 hours a month, which if you're thinking about doing it, how much time is this going to take, 10 hours a month isn't bad, really.
No, and it's for worthwhile purposes.
Yeah.
You know, we're working to really grow this next generation, and the things that Jeff has been talking about with science, technology, engineering, and math, we know from the routine articles we see in newspapers with the Department of Labor taking a look at what are the skills that young people need to really enter the workforce in the future. You know, these are things that we're really building capacity in young people today. And so we're having an impact on the economy down the road because of the skills that young people are learning in 4-H programs. And I think Jeff would be an advocate to say that young people are learning, they're inquisitive. You know, they're doing fundamental research. How do we really get young people to take a look at an issue they're interested in and help them learn how to ask the questions and find answers to difficult problems?
Pretty cool. Yeah, Rick, you had ideas.
And I think what's important, I just shot a video the other day on the value of volunteerism for UW Extension and Extension across the country. How many more people can be part of 4-H youth development because of volunteers is just astounding. Mm-hmm. That value of $41 million that Dale noted, that's over half of our total budget from county and state and federal sources. And this is just an important tip of the iceberg of volunteers overall that work with us in UW Extension.
Yeah, it's great. Carolyn and Elkhorn up next with a question or comment. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sure.
First, I want to speak to the previous caller's point that, 4-H is not cows and cooking anymore. It doesn't matter who can raise the best cow or sew the prettiest apron like it was in the day of my parents. 4-H is so much about grooming kids to be productive members of the community. Our local 4-H club and actually our county here, Walworth County, we really focus on community service, activities, getting kids out there, building life skills through communication, drama fest, music fest, camp, those kind of things. So kids do projects, but they also do so many other activities at the county, state, and national level. My son actually was a member of the 4-H shooting sports team, which in Walworth County is the second biggest project to photography. And he earned a scholarship to Ohio State University through his 4-H shooting sports work. And it was all coached by volunteers. And that's just something that we couldn't have gotten, you know, on our own. So we owe a big debt. I mean, we're a 4-H family. My parents were longtime leaders. My husband and I are leaders. And, of course, my kids and tons of other family members are all active in 4-H. It's a big family affair.
Very nice comments, Carolyn. Thank you so much. And you got Dale, you want to comment on what she had to say?
Absolutely. One of the things I'd like to comment on is that Walworth County, there's a 4-H club in Walworth County that's still in existence that is really the first club we know of in our state, the Lynn 4-H Club. So
yeah.
There's a big celebration at the county fair, the Walworth County Fair this year in honor of 4-H. And I believe, Carolyn, you can probably help us with this. I think that there's something coming up with the historical marker that's there in Walworth County somewhere. Honoring that club for its 100 years.
They are having a rededication of the historical marker, and we're going to have county dignitaries, 4-H, present and past members. It is a big deal. I did want to throw out the dates for our Walworth County Fairs, August 27th through the 1st of September.
Mm-hmm.
And as Dale said, the theme is the 100-year anniversary of 4-H based on the fact that we had the very first 4-H club in Wisconsin. We have a huge 4-H history exhibit, and we also have one of the largest displays of current 4-H projects. So if you've ever been involved with 4-H, come on out and get a taste of what they're doing now and reminisce about, you know, what we've done in the past and see where 4-H has come and gone.
Mm. Carolyn, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Another great articulate leader.
Absolutely. One of the things that both Carolyn and Jeff have brought up is that when I think about the history that we've got in our state, the origins of 4-H are all about science and technology. It was innovations out of the land-grant university system, and we're still in the mix of things, relying on research that is not just about the content of what it is young people are learning, but it's also the research that undergirds the processes that we use. And it's about experiential learning. You know, it's not about the model that has been used in public education for years that we've all experienced if we went to college, where you sit in a classroom and you have a lecture. Well, experiential learning is about giving young people real-life experiences. And the thing that we know is that when we experience something, it proves something to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't learn from success. We learn more often by failure, by pain.
I've been a good learner that way. I tell you what, we had she mentioned shooting. And Ann sent us a photo of her daughter who graduated. This is on my Facebook page if you want to take a look. Graduated in 2010. She participated in dog, sheep, rabbit, horse, and shooting sports, foods and nutrition, and clothing projects. So she had a pretty broad range of things. And she didn't stop there. She helped start an ATV safety group. She actually had a lot of great experiences that actually have informed her work beyond after graduating.
Yeah, you'll find this interesting with shooting sports, in part because of the Hunger Games, the last couple of films, the Hunger Games. Girls have enrolled more in our shooting sports program than boys have, and they're getting into archery. They're learning that skill. And, you know, it's all target shooting, and it's really generated a lot of interest with young girls across our state and across the country.
Yeah.
One of the things I've learned about 4-H was not a 4-H'er myself, so unlike Larry and Dale, I have been forever hamstrung by not having that youthful experience, is that this is a long-term relationship that we develop with youth. Could start as young as 7, as mm-hmm. was the case with Larry, even before that with Dale, I understand. And what's nice about it is it gives a youth a lot of opportunity for their own growth and leadership skills. And what we see, particularly among middle and high school students in that age bracket, is the development and actual leadership development and those youth serving as leaders as well, along with Jeff and Carolyn, who spoke before, really building those skill sets over time.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun. And for me, you know, I think back, we had to learn how to promote things. We had to learn how to put together something educational for others. We had to get up in front of people and speak. You learn so many things that are useful for you down the road in your life, that's for sure. Talking today about the 100 years of 4-H in Wisconsin with our two guests, Dale Lighthizer and Rick Clemmy. I'm Larry Mueller. Jason Butler, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're talking about the 100th anniversary of 4-H in Wisconsin with our two guests, Dale Lighthizer. Dale is the state program director for 4-H Youth Development. Rick Clemmy is dean and director of cooperative extension for UW Extension as well. So great to have both of them along. Again, if you want to join in, maybe you've got an experience to share with about 4-H, or maybe you have some questions about it, call us at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I was thinking about projects. I still have a leather belt that I made for a leather craft project. Now I think it shrunk over the years or something, because I can't get it around me anymore. Well, I probably around my leg. I think it was, I probably was about 13 when I made that. But as I think Rick was saying, so some of these things that kind of endure for a long time, and I still have a fair amount of pride in that. I did it. I got a blue ribbon for that belt, and I've kept it all these years.
Yeah, those kind of memories mean a lot of things to people that have been part of our program. You know, it's interesting, Larry, when young people are in 4-H, it's those accomplishments, it's the blue ribbons, the purple ribbons, it's the leadership opportunities that they have that mean something. And as we do research about the impact of our program, what the research points out is that you brought up demonstrations a moment ago. Mm-hmm. Demonstrations go back to those corn projects, demonstrating mm-hmm. to people something. So over the years, what a lot of our alumni say is that it's doing a demonstration, proving something that you know in front of a 4-H club, in front of a small group of people, that really develops communication skills in ways that makes it comfortable for them as they enter public schools to really talk in front of others. It's one of the most valuable life skills that people really get out of our programming.
I would certainly agree with that. We have a number of callers online. Let's see. Let's go to Preston next. Preston, we'll get to you in a second. We have Darlene and Tomahawk up next. Thank you for calling, Darlene. Hi.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You're talking about 100 years of 4-H Club. I just wanted to let you know that over 50 years ago, I was in the first and only oldest 4-H Club, the Comets, in north side of Chicago. And I took the common photography, dress review, sewing, baking, et cetera, and dog care, but I was the first and only one to ever do money management and forestry. And, of course, I never got any ribbons because nobody competed against me.
You were the best in your class.
Unusual. That was unusual in Chicago for 4-H clubs.
Yeah, and probably not now. Of course, I don't know off the top of my head if there are 4-H clubs in Chicago. I imagine there are.
There are. They've got a great program going on in Chicago. And Darlene, I think that part of your experience is reflective of what Extension has tried to do over the years, and that is really take a look at where are their young people and how can we help them develop life skills no matter where they live. And your interest in forestry in the 1950s in Chicago, you know, Chicago's not known for having a forest of trees, but it does have a forest of really tall buildings around there.
That was quite unique, I must admit.
Thanks a lot, Darlene, for calling. I want to give Preston a chance now from Lake Geneva. Hi, Preston. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking me. I just have a question, and I'd like to take my answer off the air, but I have a 13-year-old daughter. I live in Lake Geneva. She's not, when I think of 4-H, I think of farming. And she has no experience in the area, but I'd really like to introduce her to that. So if you could just tell me the requirements or how I go about getting her enrolled, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the call that you need to make, Preston, is to the Walworth County Extension office there. They're in Elkhorn. I don't happen to have that address with me, but we can put a hot link up for that on Larry's website. They're in the county administration building in downtown Elkhorn. So head up there, give them a call, and they'll be able to help you out.
Mm-hmm. There's certain to be a 4-H club in Lake Geneva or the area.
I'm sure there is. And in fact, I remember when I was in high school, there was a 4-H club. I didn't have anything to do with it, unfortunately. But I know that there is one, and I'm pretty sure it's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, give the Walworth County Extension office a call.
And you bet. And Preston, the thing you might want to think about is, introducing kids to farming and agriculture. You know, it is part of our program. Even though you may not live on a farm, one of the things that is real popular with the young people, and there's gaining interest in it across the country again, is just home gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And planting a home garden and learning how to preserve some of those foods so that you can have them over the course of the year.
That's great. Sounds like it's something she'd really be interested in.
Sure.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. I'd forgotten I had a gardening project, too. I don't remember how I did it. I must not have gotten a blue ribbon because I don't remember.
Well, you know, Larry, it's kind of interesting that we started with home ec projects in the 1920s in part because there was an issue with scurvy in the United States. People weren't getting the vitamin C they needed over the course of the winter. And so there were land-grant universities, home economists in the universities at that time that developed safe canning practices, especially for canned tomatoes, which are high in vitamin C. So they tried the same kind of process as they used with the corn clubs, have girls canning clubs and can lots of tomatoes and eat them over the winter.
Oh, what a great story.
Yeah, well, it backfired, though.
Oh, it did.
Well, it got to be a status symbol for people to have canned tomatoes, and people would line their shelves and windows and walls with them, but they didn't eat them. So home economists had to go back in and help people learn what good creative recipes were so that people could actually eat the tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. Great stories.
So once again, influencing adult behavior through youth activities.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have, lots of callers. Gary in Green Bay, I think, is next. Gary, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi there, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was a member of the Mucky 4-H Club 50 years ago. Fred Washoe was the leader of that, and I bet there's not a week that goes by that I don't talk about Fred and talk about my 4-H Club experiences. We had a patch that we sewed on our shirts that said 4-H, it ain't all cows and cooking. And what we meant by that is there's so many other things we were doing, photography class, the woodworking that I've heard about. We did a lot with the Green Garter Theater, which was the amateur theater group in our town that was all 4-H Club people, and it was the number one theater group, better than high school, better than anything else in Muskego, Wisconsin. One thing that Fred taught us as far as life lessons is concerned is that in our photography class, we would go to area nursing homes around Thanksgiving time, and we would take black and white photographs of the residents there, and they'd get all gussied up and put on their best earrings and have their hair done and a shirt and tie, and we'd take their photographs. We'd go back in the dark room, and we would process those photographs and make 5x7s, wallet size, and 8x10s for the residents, and gave them to the resident, and they would use those as Christmas gifts to their loved ones. And many times, I get choked up just thinking about this. Mm-hmm. It was the last picture we took of those people. And it was just such a great experience. And now I'm a hobbyist photographer, but I've made thousands and thousands of dollars through the photography skills that I've learned in the 4-H Club. And Fred Washoe, God rest his soul, he did so many great things. And your guests might know of him, but he was the leader of the Mucky 4-H Club in Muskego, Wisconsin for probably 30 or 40 years.
Oh, that's a great story, isn't it?
It is. Gary, one of the things you bring up is, you know, historically we've talked about what 4-H isn't. You know, it ain't all cows and cooking. You talk about that patch. And we're far more interested now in telling people about what we are. And I think some of our callers have really been able to tell that story. And we rely upon people like you and others in the program to really communicate that message and help their neighbors and friends understand what the value is to their children in neighborhoods today.
Yeah.
Dale, what I appreciate is your common, fairly consistent, maybe really consistent message to me. This is all about positive youth development, even if it's 1914 or 2014.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Gary, thank you so much. I'm really glad you shared your story with us. And I want to give Colleen and Eau Claire a chance to join in the conversation. Colleen, thank you very much for calling.
Well, thank you very much for having the opportunity to be a part of this really fantastic storytelling. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the populations that we're reaching out to with these best practice and youth development programs. And these are areas where we have pockets of poverty. Certainly we all know that we have kids at risk in our communities. And they're not just a few, there are lots. Back a few years ago, we did a study to say, where do we have the most kids that are at risk, meaning sometimes single parents, sometimes low income, sometimes minority students, and we chose schools that actually demonstrated those particular needs and began after-school programs in those schools. We brought in also our nutrition educators to help with this particular project, and I just would like to encourage throughout the state of Wisconsin, more outreach to kids at risk. These are not necessarily children that are going to have mom and dad and have a history of togetherness. These are kids that basically, unless we intercede in their lives to make their lives different, obviously we will continue to have problems that cost us very much more in the longer term. So it's something that certainly I think that we have all the equipment, all the expertise to do, and I would hope that we would perhaps think in terms of how we can better become involved with that and how we can become a resource for other youth organizations. It isn't just about youth development in 4-H. How do we share our best practices with some of the other organizations that exist throughout the state? So I'm really grateful for this opportunity and grateful for the folks that are there. I don't need to tell you what a wonderful group of people that we have as volunteers and as people who have long histories with this organization, this stellar organization. And we'd sure like to use this 100th anniversary to continue to grow and to serve much more broadly. And that's sort of what my message is.
Well, it was very eloquently put. That is for sure, Rick Lemme.
Yes, and thanks, Colleen, for the call. Colleen, of course, I've known for quite some time, a huge supporter of Extension, and she really does talk about how the program of positive youth development continues to expand out to reach youth across the state.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things that's interesting to me right now is that we've got a population lab connected with Extension, and we're using community mapping, taking a look at where we're reaching people, where we're not reaching people, taking a look at some of these targeted audiences that we really need to put some energy into, and being able to take advantage of census data and mapping technologies. We're really able to look where people are that we're not engaged with right now and begin to target them.
Colleen, love it. Thank you so much.
And you're so welcome.
And we'll turn to Kim in Madison next, who's been waiting a while. Kim, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi. I was calling because I just wanted to share how grateful I have been for the existence of what you are all talking about. I have two daughters on the autism spectrum, and I was looking for an opportunity outside of sort of the brick-and-mortar institutions like school to help with them with some issues that they had that were absolutely essential for them to experience life. So kids with autism have a tendency to have difficulty with handling frustration, the emotion of frustration. And so when they've been challenged in a bigger group, like a school classroom, a lot of times they didn't have the support needed to help them work through it. And there was an opportunity through homeschool. There was a homeschool 4-H group that I found out about. And I got my kids involved in small group activities with, you know, often highly educated parents that had a lot of experience working with their own kids and other kids. And I had the option of leaving the room with them if I needed to. I could come back. And in the end, my kids learned through those experiences how to much better manage their own emotional response to frustration and challenges that come with learning something new. And in the meantime, they did things like arc welding. There was a father who, he was an artist, and he invited the group to learn how to weld. And I never thought my daughters with autism would weld.
No.
I didn't think I would.
Wonderful.
And then my oldest daughter also learned. She did projects in photography that won one of them. Well, she won several blue ribbons and a trophy. And then since then has, you know, that's, of course, been on her resume, and that's gotten her opportunities to exhibit her art and even sell it. So, yeah, I couldn't be more grateful for that opportunity.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, Kim is bringing up some important things that are really components of our program. And research has really pointed out in recent years, as we take a look at positive youth development, that there are four essential elements of 4-H. One is belonging, and it's being a part of a group that is a safe place for kids to be emotionally and physically, intellectually, that there are caring adults that work with young people. So belonging is really a critical piece. Kim is talking about her daughter's getting involved with welding. Independence is something. And independence for us is really defined as giving young people an opportunity to make decisions about what it is they'd like to do, when they'd like to do it, about working within a group, the opportunities that they might have to get involved with committees and make decisions about things. Mastery is the thing that is another element, and that's the part where young people are learning skills and becoming really competent at the things that they're doing. And finally, generosity that some of our other callers have talked about, doing community service, getting involved in helping others. And those are ingredients to a program. They can be put together in different ways, and the recipe that we have with 4-H really gives us the tools to develop the competencies and confidence in young people that have an impact in on lives and in communities.
Yeah. Kim, thank you so much. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. Oh, I was just going to say, I didn't mention it, but it also gave us ideas in community service. So it led to a long-standing volunteering opportunity, for example, at the Humane Society and other kinds of volunteering in the community, and that I was grateful for as well.
You put a big lump in my throat there, Kim, with that story. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
And we had a Facebook comment from Sue who said, a few years ago, we hosted a lovely girl from South Korea as part of a 4-H exchange. What a wonderful cultural experience. Not only does 4-H offer opportunities on the local level, but the national and international levels as well.
Yeah. In fact, Wisconsin has one of the largest international exchange programs through 4-H of any of the 50 states in the country. And, right now, I think we have close to 50 Japanese young people, junior high school age, staying with families for a three-week time period. We send people to about 15 different countries around the world. You know, we live more and more in a global society, and how do we really raise some consciousness about the things we all share in common across the world? And it's easy to pick out the differences, but it's far more enlightening to really take a look at the common interests that all of us have.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we're starting to run. We're running a little short of time here, but I want to give Katie and Clinton has been waiting so long. Katie, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to make mention of what we call managerial projects. I had listened to Preston's question where he had wanted to get his children involved with some of the farm animals but didn't know how to do it. When he contacts the extension office there in Walworth County, he needs to know or find out where his closest 4-H club would be and find some of the leaders there and what species of animals are represented within that club, and then contact those families and ask for a managerial. What a managerial is that you're not owning the animals, but you help care for them. You help learn what they eat, how to take care of them. When it comes time for fair time, you show them as if they were your own. You get the ribbons, you get the prize money, but at the end of the fair, they go back to the farmer again.
Yeah.
It's a way for the kids to get hands-on experience with some of these farm animals. I have a couple managerial kids myself that come out and handle the animals as well as my own children. But it's a way to get the city kids or the kids who live in the small towns but not on a farm. They want those opportunities, and that's how you can do it, is through a managerial project.
Katie, I'm glad I got you on the air, because that's an important point to remember, that you a kid could be from the middle of the biggest city in the state or any city in the state and not be from a farm or not have any access to a farm, but could still show a calf or a cow at the fair.
Yeah, that may be a possibility. I'm not sure that that's available everywhere, Larry, but it's certainly something to pursue.
Yeah, it's certainly worth looking into. Now, right here as we close, by the way, Gene from Walworth County said the 4-H monument we were talking about earlier is on County Trunk BB, and it's lovely to see. So I'm just going to mention that. But for those who are interested in learning, maybe getting their kids involved, or maybe they want to take a look at becoming leaders of, you know, of one sort or another, where do they go?
Yeah, they need to go to their local county extension office. They're oftentimes in local county courthouses, but they're connected with county government. And just give those county government offices a call, ask for the extension office, and they'll be put in touch with our educators that are in every one of our counties around the state.
Great topic. And guys, thank you so much. I hope we have a chance to do this again.
Certainly.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Larry.
Dale Lighthizer is our state program director for 4-H Youth Development. Has been a 4-H professional for 36 years. Rick Clemmy is the dean and director of Cooperative Extension. And it's great to have both them with us today to talk about 4-H. 4-H is, you know, really one of those organizations, one of my favorites. I think I started at 7, and I went till I was 18. I went as long as you could go at the time, and I learned so much. So I'm happy to pass on my own enthusiasm for it to others as well. Well, coming up next, we're going to take a look at how airplanes have traditionally been fueled and what research is going on right here on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus to better help us make better travelers in terms of our environment, saving our environment. Coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.